You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
So welcome, Holly. We're back with Leslie Kogan Gold.
I'm so excited. We had so much to talk about. Welcome back to part two of our interview with Leslie Kogan Gold.
We're going to learn a lot more about Andrew Gold, so let's get started right now. I mean, your job is to keep Andrew Gold's name out there and to keep his music alive.
Right.
And so, I mean, what was this learning curve like? First of all, you know, you've lost someone that it's just a horrible loss. And then right. All of a sudden when you come out of it, you know, suddenly you're like, how'd you learn all about what needs to be done? And
well, first, I think anyone who inherits a legacy like this, I feel it's a responsibility to keep the art alive because the art lives on and it's somebody's 50 years of work. So to me, that's the first thing I looked at. And yes, and music business is ridiculously complicated. So you just kind of have to go and learn things one at a time. So I had to learn, you know, what publishing was and how that works. And then once I knew that, figure out what I owned, find all the co-writers. Because if you're going to, put the music out or place it in TV or commercials, you need to know where the other writer is. So I had to do a lot of work in that regard. Also, he was a producer, so I had to find all the contracts and figure out what was going on with that. So he had these different hats. He was a performer, so there's artist things you have to learn. So I had to figure out which labels he was on and start developing relationships with labels like Warner Brothers. And he has a Halloween album on Concord, and he had albums on Sony. So I had to figure out the artist royalties part of it and how to work with labels, too. The learning curve is incredible. And now with social media, you have to sort of understand how that works, what sound exchanges, it's like, performance, royalties and all that. So it took a long time and I still am learning as I go. But now what I do to give back, because it was such a long journey, if I meet somebody who inherits a catalog, another woman, it's usually women, I try to help them. Because I know the important things to know first, because I wish somebody would have helped me that way. So I like to give back and help other people, because it is indeed extraordinarily overwhelming.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's a mitzvah.
And it makes me happy to do that. And other people will say, why don't you charge them? I'm like, no. It's my gift to the universe.
Is this the first Andrew Gold production that you're putting out?
We released one live show before. Okay. And I've been releasing singles. I released one of my more inspired ideas. I made Thank You for Being a Friend into a Christmas song. So I released that. So I'm starting to release singles here and there. I released a Brindle song that was just Andrew doing the vocals, which is one of the things I found when I was doing the archiving. And it's called Savannah. And it's just gorgeous. So I released that as a single.
The sunlight came to the Spanish moss, made diamonds in your hair. I held my breath, but I knew at once I didn't have a prayer. Silken blue-eyed angel, please come down, I had to say. Just like a dream, you turned and looked my way. Savannah, it's a paper moon that shines on you. Savannah.
Because at first you think it's all so precious and you want to do it at the exact right time.
Right.
Then you realize, no, you have to get the music out there. So you go through these, different emotions about it that you have to let go of. So this is the first release like this of, you know, a treasure trove of things that were not released before. Because a live show wasn't released, but those songs people knew. So I was thrilled about this one because these are some of my favorite songs that I found going through this process. And we were also ecstatic when Brad and I, he's the other producer for Mom & Vore, found it on tape, on two-track tape, because that's the best quality. So we transferred that.
Turn around, tell me, what do you see? All the sun in your eyes is too bright to see me. When you're flying away, something tells me to say, I want you to be free. But oh, my love, come down to me.
And then I have a box set coming out from Cherry Red, and they did a live Wax show. Wax was his project in the 80s with Graham Goldman of 10cc. He actually got asked to join 10cc, and he couldn't do it. He regretted that, though, because he loved 10cc. But he did produce and write with them, and then he went on to work with Graham. So a live show was released by Cherry Red out of Europe, and they're going to do a big box set later this year.
How did you decide, or how did you even go about releasing them, the songs that you have released, the singles?
I did the singles on my own. I mean, I work with, like, Warner, I work with, they did, you know, to get them to release things, but they own the master, so you just have to sort of do things in tandem with them. But the Savannah I released on my own, it actually did quite well, and which thrilled me, because the main goal is to get people to hear the music, and it did quite well. And the Christmas one I released myself. I mean, I manage the artist pages on Spotify and Apple.
Okay.
So I can submit to curators on my own. See, a geek, here I'm a geek. And so I've done a lot of work, you know, going all over the internet, making sure that those profiles are updated and that I do control them. I'll share them with labels if they want to, like Concord, who did the Halloween album. And I have to talk about that because there's a song on that that's viral. Every kid knows Andrew Gold because of Spooky Scary Skeletons.
That's so great.
Yeah, and it went mad on TikTok, which made me very happy. So Concord has worked with me a lot on that. And we released the remix this year, fortunately, at the same time the TikTok thing went nuts, because it's a particular remix that's very popular.
Yeah.
So they helped me a lot with you know, things. You know, so that, yeah, it's probably the only song they have in their entire catalog like that.
Scary skeletons and shivers down your spine. Shrieking skulls will shock your soul, seal your doom tonight. Spooky, scary skeletons speak with such a screech. You'll shake and shudder in surprise when you hear these zombies shriek.
Go back to the TikTok thing. How did that come about? I mean, I'm curious about, there's a particular dance that everyone's doing. I looked on YouTube and there's like, there's a compilation of about 25 different versions of kids doing this spooky, scary skeletons dance.
There's millions of them, actually.
On TikTok, you can go crazy.
Right. I'm not, yeah, I just went on the YouTube, the best of. I couldn't go through the millions.
Right. So, well, it happened on its own, which is the most, you know, wonderful way. It's viral because the song was viral amongst kids, and one young man, thank you, young man, a Minecrafter, I believe is his handle, did the original, you know, choreography of that particular dance. And then all the other kids and adults copied him. And yeah, there's tutorials how to do it. It's like a cheerleading dance, sort of. And some of them are magnificent. They use like animation. And yeah, so it went crazy on TikTok. But it had been viral on YouTube, especially on Halloween. But the TikTok thing happened at the end of the year. So it was one of the first viral things that happened. But it was just on its own. It was, you know, just organic. So, you know, thank you, world. And thank you for magnificent songwriting. I think it shows that the cleverness of that song. It has Beatle influence, but it also has his sort of youthful humor, which is why I think it caught on with kids. And the lyrics are really fun.
Did he write this for his children? Or what was the impetus for creating this Halloween album?
He loved Halloween. He was very young at heart. And yes, he had kids. So he involved his children in it. Absolutely. So it was a children's album. That's what the target was, is for, you know, a fun and scary release original, because there's plenty of other songs on there that are anthem songs that are originals. And he even wanted to do an animated special. That's another thing I'm working on. We're trying to do something with, because of the viral sensation. But yeah, so his kids were involved. They sang on the record. Mm. And some of his kids' friends. So he did involve his children, but he really loved Halloween as well.
I'm curious with that now, if there's any way to tell how many new fans he might have, how many of these kids, this generation that have, you know, gotten this dance, you know, this song from this dance, that have gone to listen to his other, you know, to any of his catalog. I'm curious if there's any way to track that.
It's really hard to track that. I think they have, I mean, you could see comments on YouTube where they'll go, this spooky, scary skeleton. He also wrote, "Thank you for being a friend." So you do see that crossover on YouTube. I think, you know, probably "Thank you for being a friend" is the biggest other song they'll jump to.
Yeah.
And they probably listen to other songs on Halloween House, because that's where it will probably lead them if they go and listen to the song. His profile has lifted because of that. Like, I have a lot more followers and fans on like Spotify. So I think they have heard other songs. I mean, that's the hope, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I assume that, especially now, because the way kids are on, you know, social media and they're on the internet, the information is so immediately accessible. Like, for us, it takes a little bit of work, you know, our generation, to find something to dig a little deeper. For them, it's nothing. So I assume that, you know, right then and there, they've looked.
Right. And, you know, so, like, if they hear songs like Lonely Boy, they typically fall in love with him. He's such a great musician that his songs are really appealing.
Yeah. If,
you know, when they get heard. Like, I'm working with a filmmaker whose son knew Spooky Scary Skeletons, and she played Lonely Boy for him, and now it's like on his playlist. So there you go.
That's nice. Until this week, I didn't even realize that he was the singer for Final Frontier, the Mad About You theme song.
Yeah.
So what's the story behind that? How did he become the singer of that song? Even though
is a really big fan of Andrew's. Mm. And I guess they became friends, but he huge fan, another super fan. So yeah, because of his relationship and because he was a fan, he was asked to sing it. When he went in, you might have read about this, he had a cold. So he sounds really sexy and hoarse on it, but it came out good because of that. So yes, he did. So he did do the theme. And it was also the first song that was played on Mars. So he's the first human voice heard by whatever aliens are on Mars. The rover played it. That was up there. So that was kind of a cool thing that happened with that song.
Well, this seems like a good time to take a break, so we'll be right back.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
So welcome back to What Difference Does It Make?
So that was one of the other joyous things. It's just like kind of, I was present in the room when he wrote songs many times, but hearing it this way was different, where you'd hear a beginning track and then you'd hear him la-la-ing or vocalizing the melody, and then it became a song. And there was one in particular that was pretty magnificent to observe that initially was a song written for the Chipmunks and for Theodore. And it sounds like a cartoon song. And he's singing, you know, part of the lyrics and Theodore's in it. And then later on, you hear it becoming this ballad that ended up being a Celine Dion type song. And he vocalizes it that way. And it's just stunning. He had his friend, Greg Prestipino, who did lyrics with him, come in at the end and help him write lyrics. And then you hear the finished song. So to hear it go from this Chipmunk song to this beautiful ballad is just amazing and really interesting, I think.
It all came together. He wove it all together. I mean, you're talking about Chipmunks elements and love song elements ended up being the finished product.
Right. So initially it was going to be one song, and then I guess maybe it didn't work out that the Chipmunks project didn't happen at that time. So he went on and made this into a different song. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, I heard a lot of different songwriting sessions, especially with Graham. You could hear them trying to work out songs, and they would record it on the DATs. And so that was interesting, too. And he finished one with Stephen Bishop, but it was originally a Graham Andrews song. So that became a totally different song. So Andrew had the whole melody and the music, and then Stephen did the lyrics. So there's all these different stories like that.
That's wonderful.
Where these songs were, you know, in process and then became something else at the end.
So you've touched on a lot about him being like a Beatles freak. Was he a Beatles? We can call him a Beatles freak, right? I mean, that was his favorite.
Yes.
So what was he got to work with Ringo Starr? Is that correct? He produced an album?
Yes.
Yeah.
So he worked with him. He worked with Ringo Starr. He almost worked with Don Lennon, and he was cued for a project, and then it got canceled. And I was really disappointed, of course. And then he played with at live shows with Paul McCartney. So yeah, so he didn't work with George, although he did obviously channel George. You can hear that in the solo on the Linda Ronstadt, "You're No Good."
Yeah,
very George and Harrison inspired.
Yeah, and he liked. As I was looking through, apparently, as you mentioned on with these phone messages, he also formed tribute bands. It said he had like a Birds tribute band, and what else was there? What can you tell me about these bands that he had?
The Birds were another one of his big influences beside the Beatles. And he told me, it's funny once, he said, if you aren't a Birds fan, I'm going to have to break up with you. that was Andrew. So he decided to form this Birds cover band because there were a lot of Beatles covers bands already, right? So he did this, and it was called Birds of a Feather. It was in about 2001. Mm. And he was meticulous about it. He made the band learn every single part, absolutely like the Birds played it, including the mistakes that were, you know, if there was a mistake that had to be in the song. And I remember he practiced 8 Miles High, which is a very fast lead, over and over again on the bed. So he wanted to get that right when we were sitting around. And yeah, so he played locally and did it in Los Angeles. I went to every one of those shows. I remember those are fond memories for me.
Oh. I did see that the spelling of Brindle was a tribute to the Birds with the Y.
Oh, I did not know that. Oh. Yeah, okay, there you go. Okay.
I'm shocked. I can't believe I would know something you didn't know.
Oh, yeah,
no, maybe information.
I'm friends with Wendy, so I'll talk to her about that. Musicians back then, these bands were huge influences. Bob Dylan, all of them like that.
I was going to ask, going back, your favorite part in the process, the discovery and, you know, getting it out there. I know it's dealing with the labels.
I love finding the great music and then playing it over and over when I like a song. I mean, I think that's magnificent. Getting the songs placed in TV shows or ads is pretty magnificent, and through my wonderful partners. So I just think hearing the great music or discovering something I didn't know about him, or, you know, getting something done that gets him more well known, and because it fills my heart with joy, because as I said earlier, that's my goal, is to get him more out there. And then I sort of feel him in the room, because I know he would have loved that.
That's nice.
To be more recognized. Yeah, you know, because artists like him that play 15 instruments and are all about music don't want to self-promote. You know, it's not something they want to do. They don't want to do the business. They just want to write songs and perform and play. And so I think he would really be thrilled. So hearing the music, getting it out there, getting it placed, you know, in shows, makes me really happy.
So speaking of discovery, Thank You for Being a Friend came out in the early 80s, but it came off an album from 78, I believe. How was that discovered? Or do you know the story behind how that particular song was placed for the Golden Girls?
I know some of it, and I've asked people too. You know, he was in England at the time. Yes, it was a hit on his original 1978 release that also had Never Let Her Slip Away, which is a huge hit still in Europe. It had Thank You for Being a Friend and on that album. So it was a hit, but not as big of a hit as Lonely Boy. And he was in Europe and he got a call. You need to come home. Your song is going to be used on this TV show. So he tried to get one of his ex-girlfriends at the time to sing it, because she was a singer named Debbie Pearl. And I guess they already had picked a jingle singer. So, I'm not sure, you know, how they found the song, you know, the actual show. I should probably do some research on that. I'm sure they were considering a number of songs, but he did get called in England, came back, and it was, you know, really cool and exciting. And he has always joked about it, that it was his accountant's favorite song when he performed it on stage. So but yeah, it was a wonderful, wonderful thing to have happened on a magnificent show that represents so many wonderful things and is still beloved. I mean, I get so many stories from people, you know, young people at every age saying, I sang that song to my mother when I graduated, or I sang it to a teacher. So people really have these warm and wonderful memories of that song.
Who was his favorite Golden Girl? Do you know?
I'm guessing Betty White.
You think he's more of a Rose than a Blanche?
But he would have gone for the sex-crazed one. If you asked him, I'm sure he would have gone for the one that wanted to have sex all the time because he's a rocker. But today, he'd probably say Betty White because he's so magnificent.
Actually, I thought they were all magnificent, but yeah.
Yes, they all were. I know he watched Maud, too, so... Yeah, he probably would have liked them all. You're right.
All right, so let's talk about something new. And I wanted to go on this cover because it's this redheaded guy who's probably, musician, always indoors. He's buried in the sand, and it's just his head. And this, right. I mean, how did this come about, this cover photo?
Okay, so those are Polaroids. All of the photos on the album are Polaroids from a trip that I found, and that I just was in mad love with that photo. It's just magnificent, the look on his face. You could see the water behind him. And there were a number of other pictures of him buried in the sand like that. And he was with Peter Asher at the time, and we had Peter do the liner notes. So that also made sense to use those Polaroids because they were on vacation. He was with Lorraine Newman, his girlfriend at the time. And Peter was with Mackenzie Phillips, and they're pictured on one of the Polaroids in the artwork there. But yes, we decided it would be an amazing vinyl cover, that image. So, we just decided, Brad and I, that there was just no other picture that would be better. And we just thought it was cool to use these Polaroids, it had a nice vintage feeling. And the one where he's on the floor and around all of his tapes. Yeah. And he wrote these little comments on the bottom. It says decisions under the tapes. So I found those when I was going through photos.
Very nice. Now, he put a note on the Polaroid. Does he do that with the music? Like these demos of like, this is a good take or just little things to maybe help guide you as to what to use, what might be something to publish?
The Dats had a very organized table of contents. So the demos were just listed 1973 demos. So that was the only thing on there. So where I would see the notes you're talking about is sometimes he would write that in iTunes, which would help me. Like a lot of the unfinished works, he'd be like Stingish one. So I know it was like Sting. So those were the kind of things he'd write on the unfinished songs. But a lot of it I just had to sort of figure out for myself because they would be labeled like the time period or who he worked with, but he wouldn't necessarily write, or at least this one.
Mm-hmm. If only, right?
If only, yes.
Did he work with Peter Asher? I mean, you can't get more closer to the Beatles than Peter Asher.
They were very close when they were working on Linda. He talked about how Peter had just become a new producer. So he really relied a lot on Andrew to help because Andrew was so talented. So they sort of were. So it was Peter, Linda, and Andrew a lot doing things together. So they started there. Peter produced the second album with Lonely Boy. Mm. So Peter produced that one. And then Andrew produced the third album. But yeah, so Peter produced him. And they were friends. Yes, they worked together a lot. And I have some great footage of them on video when they're both very young and very redheaded.
So you have plans for this footage you had, the video and film.
Yes.
You have plans for it.
That was another part of the archival process where I went through Betamax and VH. Yeah, I have a Beta machine. I had some actual film. The Linda film that I referenced earlier was actually film. So I had to bring that into a film house to get transferred. But everything else I did here are with editors And he also had different camcorders over the years. So I had to buy all the different camcorders that fit, you know, the bigger Super 8s and the smaller cassettes. Mm-hmm. And I transferred all of this footage. So now I have it all, you know, together for someone with Beau. And I'm in the earliest stages of a hopeful documentary. And this footage, yeah, the vintage footage is magnificent for that. So I've been working with different filmmakers, and now the big thing is getting funding. Yeah. So I'm working on that.
Good luck.
Oh, that's, yeah. I imagine fun, but frustrating, but we would be very excited to see it.
Me too. Yeah. So, yeah. So, well, I'll get there. Those are just, you know, the more difficult projects because of that aspect of things. Right. I'm actually more excited about the potential play. So we'll see what happens with that. It's kind of like a mother-son story. Mm,
like a lonely boy type story?
Well, yes. There you go. The story is Lonely Boy. His mother is very well known on Broadway and has a very interesting story as well. So I think the best way to go about it, and you know, I've discussed people who I'm working with on it, to combine that, to make it into mother-son. Then you have the music of the mother, you know, I pre-cleared a song from My Fair Lady. I could have danced all night. I pre-cleared You're No Good because I didn't want people saying to me, oh, you can't get that music. So I pre-cleared that stuff. And I talked to the King and I people and they were open to a medley. So we can get Marnie's music. We can get some of Linda's music. And then we have Andrew's music. And I think it's much more interesting than for an audience to have those, you know, the Broadway music and the rock and roll music.
That's terrific. So it will be multi-generational.
Right.
Feel, I mean, yeah.
And then we can throw Spooky in there.
Bring in the young ones.
Tying it all together.
Right.
One other thing about something new. Chuck Plotkin was the producer who's done a lot of Springsteen stuff now. And of course, and he also produced Holly 8675309. So, you know, so there's the 80s tie-in.
Yes, that song.
But so what was the relationship there? I mean, Chuck, I guess, hadn't produced yet. What was their relationship like?
They were friends. And he also worked with the Brindle people, I believe. He worked with Carla for sure. And I think he worked with Wendy. So he was friends and working with all of them. And then he worked at, I believe, Electra Asylum. And so he had a studio and he let Andrew come in and use the studio. So the full tracks were recorded in his studio. So that's where those came from. The demos, you know, he did on his own. So he may have gone into Clover Studios to do those too, but he did it on his own rather than with the full band. So Chuck was a friend and he helped him with his first album and the first record deal. And so, they were friends their whole life.
Do you have a favorite Andrew Gold song or era or something that really moves you, like you like to play for once in a while?
I have a lot of favorite songs, but the Genevieve is one of my favorites from the Electra Asylum years, the Warner Brothers. I really love that song. I like One of Them Is Me a lot. Of course, Lonely Boy. So I used to, when I was mad at Andrew, when we got into stupid fights, I would go outside, take a walk and play Genevieve, and I would not be mad. Because it would fill me with joy. So that's a great thing to do. Anyone out there who's married to a musician, I suggest doing that when you're mad at them. Go play your favorite song on your earbuds and you're not mad anymore. And then I love songs on this particular album a lot. I like Come Down to Me. I like the title track. I like The World Tomorrow Brings. I really like this album a lot. I like some of the 80s stuff a lot too. I like Right Between the Eyes, which is a fun song with Wax. I mean, I could go on and on about songs I like because I hear them so often. But and some unreleased songs I really like. There's one called Amour du Jour that I haven't released yet, which is about falling in love all day with different girls, which sort of is very Andrew. So I want to release that at some time.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a lot of fun. It sounds like we're going to be hearing Andrew Gold music for a long time to come. So.
And seeing more. I'm looking forward to seeing.
Yes, no. That is a promise. You will.
I hope when you're ready, you'll come back and talk to us.
Okay, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Take care and enjoy. Stay safe.
Thank you, Leslie Cogan Gold.
Thank you guys so much, too.
So thanks so much for joining us. This has been our talk with Leslie Cogan Gold.
It's been a blast.
It has been a blast.
It's been so enlightening.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I'm very thankful that she took the time out to talk with us about Andrew Gold and his incredible career.
Make sure you check out the new release. It's called Something New, Unreleased Gold from Andrew Gold. It's going to be great.
So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Ollie.
Check you later.
Over and out.
I'm so glad that you are mine. I used to feel like everyone was alone with me. Now I know that that just wasn't true. 'Cause now it seems like everything around me is all changed 'cause everything is new.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.